The first item on the agenda is a moment of silence for former supervisor Mike Gilbert. Not all of you served on the board with Mike. I did have the honor of being on the board with him for a number of years, and I can honestly say that in the entire time that I knew him, both on the board and after he got off the board, I never, ever heard anybody say a bad word about the guy. Just one of the nicest people you could ever meet. He was, and I just asked Chuck and Leon if they remembered, and our collective recollection is that he was on the Highway Committee for about 20 years and chaired it for most of that time. I think it would be fair to say that he liked asphalt at least as much as Arlene likes asphalt. He was a great advocate for quality county roads, and it showed in the product that we had throughout the county. So Mike died April 1st, and the funeral was last week. I was not able to go because I had court, but Jeff Blesky gave me the thing, which I'll pass around, the little card from there. But I'd like to ask everybody to stand for a moment. We'll do a moment of silence on behalf of Mike Gilbert. Thank you very much. Let's go on to the second item, which is a proclamation for County Government Month. Sharon Hampson.
I think it's worth noting that Mike's granddaughter does work for our county, too. She's helped with the regionalization of family care, and now she's working on the Crisis Mental Health Assessment Center.
And that would be Melissa Gilbert.
Yes.
Thank you, Sharon, for pointing that out. Ray, can I get you to start this? Thank you. All right, go ahead, Steve.
Proclamation May 2009, La Crosse County Government Month. Whereas La Crosse County employs over 1,300 people working with an annual budget of $129.6 million, yet at the same time, La Crosse County maintains the third lowest operating tax levy out of the 72 Wisconsin counties. And whereas La Crosse County government employees are committed to excellence in their work, they celebrate public service, anticipate changing needs, and respect diversity. La Crosse County employees inspire integrity, pride, trust, and respect within their organization by encouraging employee involvement and creativity as a source of new ideas to continuously improve services. As stewards of community resources, they embrace the opportunities and challenges of technological advances, evolving demographics, urbanization, revitalization, and the changing role of government. And whereas May 3rd through 9th, 2009 is National County Government Week, America's counties provide a variety of essential services, many of which work to protect our communities. And whereas counties protect residents from natural disasters, terrorist attacks, crime and drug abuse, counties are the first to respond to emergency situations and are primarily responsible for planning for disasters. Counties also work to protect families, children, and youth, and whereas counties provide services that make America's communities stronger, safer places to live and raise families, counties police our streets, fight fires, save lives in hospitals, keep families healthy, repair bridges, plow snow, help troubled youth, train laid-off workers, and perform countless other jobs. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby does proclaim the month of May La Crosse County Government Month.
Moved by Margaret Wood, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Any comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Next item is a report from Corp Counsel on the Hawkins Notice of Injury. You will note that this is in closed session, or is an open session, so Bill's comments are going to be ones that are appropriate to open session, and if he gets any questions that would not be appropriate to open session, then you will not get an answer, unfortunately. But this is, we're at the status now where it did not seem appropriate to go into closed session. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you probably read in the paper, on April 2nd, 2009, we received a notice regarding the death of Robert Hawkins. And what Mr. Doyle wanted me to explain to you a little bit is the procedure and what that's all about, so that you have some idea on how we handle these things. Of course, when there's a death, we immediately notify our insurance carrier, and we did so in this case as of the date that Mr. Hawkins had died. I was in immediate contact with our insurance carrier, so to put them on notice, and there is a reinsurance carrier involved, and they were put on notice. So that it goes along with this kind of incident. But really, the notice is a statutory requirement under Section 893.80 of the Wisconsin statutes, and it's a condition precedent to commencement of a lawsuit. In other words, they have to do this by Wisconsin law if they intend to file a lawsuit bringing forth Wisconsin claims. There are really two parts under the statute in 893.80. The first part is the notice of injury, which is the notice that we did receive, and the second part is the claim for damages. Just to give you a little information about a notice of injury, this is gives us some information about the event, when it occurred, who was injured, and the kind of the nature of the action that they're claiming caused injury or damage. This gives the county the opportunity to see a little bit more detail as to what our liability might be, and to give us some knowledge about these events. This notice is, when we receive this, has been sent on to our insurance carrier. The second part of a notice requirement under Wisconsin law is a claim for damages, and in that they have to specify the address of the claimant, an itemized statement of the relief sought. This could be money damages, it could be injunctive relief, specific performance, but generally it's money damages. That's what they're usually seeking in these kinds of matters. This has to be filed with the clerk of the county, and it must be disallowed before they can commence their lawsuit. There are two ways that the disallowance occurs. One is when, and many of you that have been on the board for some time have seen these resolutions in the past, in which we make a recommendation, usually based on the advice of our insurance carrier, and the board passes the resolution disallowing the claim. Sometimes we don't do that, and for various reasons. After 120 days, the claim is deemed disallowed, and a plaintiff could file a lawsuit if they choose to do that. In a nutshell, is the statutory requirements. As I said, they've completed the first part of that. They have not specified the claim for damages at this time, so we don't know what those damages might be.
Bill, is there a time deadline for that next step?
Well, it basically would be governed by the statute of limitations, but they have to keep in mind that we have 120 days to act upon their claim for damages when that's filed. So, for instance, if they wait until 2 years and 11 months, we could just sit on it, and the statute of limitations would expire, making it legally impossible for them to successfully commence a lawsuit. They can always sue us, but that would be a defense.
In state court, but they could still do it in federal?
Well, it would depend on the statute of limitations in federal court. I think we mentioned sometime in the past that in federal court, if they choose to sue us under some theory of a violation of civil rights, they don't have to comply with these the statute. They can sue us at any time in federal court. The federal courts have ruled that our state law doesn't apply to civil rights action. So, but generally, they'll do this to preserve their rights of state law claims. Sometimes we get sued in federal court with both civil rights and state law claims, sometimes in state court. So, they're the plaintiffs, they decide. And we've had some actions in which they have not filed a claim for damages, nor have they filed a lawsuit. So, you never know what they're going to do until they finally complete the steps. So, there are several matters that I probably advised you in the past where no action was taken, and the statute of limitations would bar those actions if the 3 years in personal injury would have passed.
Anybody have any questions for Bill? Ralph. Microphone, Ralph. Ralph, microphone.
You're involved in this, Bill, but on all these types of matters, the primary or lead attorneys are always through the insurance company?
Right. They have the right to, or they have the obligation, I should say, to defend us. And generally, we receive the defense counsel from a Milwaukee law firm. They've represented us in a number of these matters and very successfully up to this point. So the Curvelo Carlson firm, Ray Pollan is the lead attorney that's often assigned, and I specifically ask for him because they're very familiar with these jail lawsuits, and they've represented the company, other counties in similar kinds of actions, so they're very very knowledgeable about this and give seminars to the jail administrators and all of that sort of thing. So they know what they're doing in the area of jail lawsuits.
Other questions for Bill? Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Next up, County Administrator, report on independent jail medical review.
on your desk this evening is a more detailed a written description, but we thought it might be appropriate to bring you up to date on an action that the sheriff and I have been working together on. Coincidentally, today, Dr. Scott Chavez, the vice president of the National Commission on Correctional Health Care, is in town doing a two-day site visit at our request to help evaluate the status of how we provide jail medical care, how it compares to national standards, best practices, and to systematically go through in the 2 days what our policies and procedures are. It seems to be timely given the issues that we just talked about, but also the HPL contract is up at the end of this year and will be a significant policy issue that we'll talk about as we go through an RFP for the new year. The current contract expires as described January of 2010. I provided a number of additional things, so those of you that are interested may want to go to the website that's listed there for the National Commission on Corrections Healthcare and learn more about them. Now, we're not necessarily saying we're going to pursue accreditation. It is an option, but they also, independently of accreditation, pursue providing technical and professional assistance for jails and prisons and correction settings all over the country and trying to provide the best established care and the best practices and best policies for jail medical issues. So this was an issue that the sheriff and I felt strongly about and wanted to go out and try to continue to implement continuous improvement and look for ways to make sure that we're making the right choices and making the right decision for our jail medical operation. So I thought that would be helpful for you. That report, by the way, will be back to the county within 30 to 45 days. It will be a public document. It will be provided to the law enforcement or Judiciary and Law Enforcement Committee, and of course, copies for the county board. And it will help us in guiding our consideration of an RFP for the new medical services contract, of course, in the new year.
John Menninger.
A couple of quick questions. When would you be going out with that RFP for the new, would it be April, this is April, so August, September? Because I want to be sure and give our two healthcare institutions a full opportunity to weigh in on this. Do you have any idea when you'd go out?
It would probably be this summer. I haven't picked an exact date, but certainly we're also looking for some advice on how to structure an RFP. You know, how did we do the last RFP? He's considering the contract. But, yes, it'll be during the summer, and we'll continue to outreach to the two local, as we did last time. Mm-hmm. If we can get a local provider, that'd be great.
Yeah, because I just want to make sure they have plenty of time to weigh in and think about it.
Certainly, and we also know how important this is to many individual supervisors. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to provide this and make sure we're getting guidance from you guys.
And then a question. I don't know if there's other organizations out there than NCCHC. I'll be glad to check on their website. But you said it says independent jail medical review. How the heck do you know they're independent and objective?
Well, they're tried to describe some of the history, and you can read more about them. For example, particularly Dr. Chavez has never dealt directly with HPL. Any of the medical reviews that he's done, HPL was not the contractor, so I think that's one indication of his independence. As well as to have credibility as an accreditation agency, you can't be too closely tied to any particular provider or any particular operation. I do happen to know that the last review that he just did was in Broward County, Florida. much, much larger, more complex kinds of jail issues and those kinds of things. Everything we've been able to read and learn about NCCHC is top-notch. It's highly professional, and we're anticipating getting good guidance, not just in this two-day site visit, but also suggested next steps of what additional things we ought to be doing, programs, policies, training, those kinds of things. They specialize in health care in community corrections facilities. They also have some additional things that they're doing in mental health and other and medication management and those kinds of things. The sheriff and I did quite a bit of research trying to find the best resource to help us down this path, because while HPL has been an improvement over the difficulties that we've had historically, we still all have legitimate concerns about exactly that we're doing the right thing for our clients that are incarcerated, and we want to do the best we can to take whatever changes we can, and that's why we brought in this gentleman to provide the best expertise, as well as what more analysis can we do, and what's the next stage of that. So we're going to keep you involved in this.
Other questions or comments, Ralph?
Well, expanding on John, so last time did either one of the locals bid on this?
No, we actually sought them out, and they weren't interested.
Oh, okay. And did they tell us why? Was it because of all the litigation that seems to come out of the jails? And this is commonplace throughout the state.
Well,
is that it?
You know, I can only speculate, but the difficulty is nationally, corrections health care is a specialty. And we're not the only jail in this situation where the local providers aren't, don't want to deal with the kinds of issues and challenges that you have in corrections health care. And frankly, the majority of our cost is actually for the in-house nurses. It's not for the physicians that are on call. It's for the nursing staff. And when we were, as a county, providing that, the turnover in trying to keep nurses was very, very difficult. As soon as somebody would get a chance to post out into another position, by union rules, they were gone. So it's not the easiest clientele. It's not the easiest situation, working situation. So it's a challenge.
Leanne Paff. Oh, wait just a second. Ralph, did you
have one other question on the nurses? Did we consider doing what we did? I think we did at Lakeview in some of those more difficult positions. Did we give them an extra dollar an hour, $2 an hour, not to bid out or something, to get some continuity there or something?
I don't recall, but we bid this out in 2004. HPL has been our contractor since, so it was very early in my tenure.
Now, Leon Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wondering, how was this derived at to go with him? Was it a cost procedure, or is there a cost, or did you have that out on bids, or what does it cost?
This is a professional service. The total cost for his site visit and review will be $4,500. It will be taken out of the jail medical line item in the budget, and it was an administrative decision that I felt that we've had enough concerns about jail medical that you need, and we need more information on how to structure going ahead. So it again, it was within my authority budgetarily, but we thought it was important to let you know what's happening. So when that report comes out, you've got some forewarning.
Terry Johnson.
Has HPL been cooperative so far in this first?
Certainly. We just met with Dr. Chavez this morning on his initial visit, and a number of main people with HPL has actually made themselves available and come to La Crosse County, and they wouldn't usually be here today. So they are being cooperative. They're trying to do everything they can. HPL knows of the NCCHC and some places that they provide service. The system is accredited, so they are a provider that's recognized nationally. Dr. Chavez has not directly worked with them.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Maureen Friedland.
Thank you. I wanted to thank you for taking the initiative to do this. I think that this is a very good idea to get some someone with some national experience and who can compare different, give us an idea of what we should expect from a service provider. But I wanted to ask the question, they're going to be meeting with HPL, obviously. Who else will they be meeting with? Is it possible for them to meet with any former inmates or any other bodies or community groups or anything like that that would be able to provide some input?
Maureen, a more expansive review might actually be a part of something if we decided to pursue accreditation. I was concerned that in preparation for the RFP that what we had the opportunity to do is to have him review what HPL is doing, to meet with the jailers, to meet with Steve Josephson, who is our mental health social worker that's in the jail, you know, as often as anybody, to really give an in 2 days, it's difficult to get the sum total of everything that's there, but also to make a snapshot and then give us some of those recommendations. Some of those other ideas might be worth pursuing longer term, but we wanted to get a snapshot of where we're at right now, just given the context of some of the concerns we've had over the last couple of years. So hold on to those ideas, and as we learn more about and see the quality of the work from NCCHC, I've never worked with them directly either. If it looks like something we want to pursue in the area of accreditation and those kinds of things, maybe that's worth investing in. And I know in my experience in city government, accreditation includes all of those types of things, at least in police and fire. Public hearings and lots of involvement of the constituencies that are served by an area, and I've been very impressed historically by accreditation in those two areas. I'm not as experienced in this area, but we wanted some expertise that, frankly, we're not bringing to the table locally that can help us. So hold on to those ideas and give us that direction as we go ahead and review this. We wanted to be able to get as much as we could in a short period of time.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Steve's up again on the update on the housing plan.
Now this one is a very brief report. I don't have a lot to share with you except that we got a whole lot of public attention from the media and discussions that were going on about the impact of remodeling on the number of beds that we have in the existing jail while we're changing from the facility to the new addition. In working with the sheriff and working with the construction manager, we've made the decision to postpone some of that remodeling until later in the process so that we won't end up losing those beds right now and that we'll end up coming back to you with what that new timeline will look like. So it had looked like we were going to lose a number of those beds in the remodeling in the existing pods before the additional direct supervision pods were open. We're going to postpone that for a little bit longer. Don Carlson is reviewing the timeline so that we don't end up losing those beds because it was putting pressure on the number of beds that were actually available. So again, I could go into a lot more details. It took more work than that. But the important thing is that we're working with the sheriff, we're working with the contractors and construction manager to make sure that we minimize the impact on our jail bed capacity so that we don't have that kind of conflict and that we can work through this. The contractors are fine with it, and so we'll keep you up to date as we move ahead with a revised timeline.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. With proposed new sentencing guidelines that are probably going to be coming out. Will that have any impact on how we're remodeling that jail, or isn't that far enough along to have any guidance there?
That's actually a subject that the Criminal Justice Management Council, it's on their agenda to try to monitor probation and parole. Of course, Bill Hammes comes to those meetings regularly. My initial understanding is that they don't expect it to have a huge impact locally. Statewide, it sounds like a large number, but statistically, the number of new clients that probation and parole would have here doesn't seem to be that large of the early release, but we are reviewing that as part of the Criminal Justice Management Council to try to stay ahead of it.
Tom Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on the delaying of the start of the remodeling. Could you answer two questions on that? Number one, does that delay, or how does that affect the completion of the remodeling?
I should have mentioned that. We're expecting that will not delay the completion. It's okay. A matter of sequencing.
Okay. And then the follow-up question was, and how does that affect the opportunity to get the women from here over to there?
We're still expecting that the women's facility will not be able to be closed until the whole facility is finished at this point and we're able to move in.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you. And, Steve, I'm going to ask you to do the lead-in for the next one also.
I've talked about this a couple of times at full board meetings as well as executive, and you've, of course, had an introduction to this in the description in the monthly report that went out, as well as, of course, hopefully the agenda item. Basically, what we've got the opportunity to do is during the 5 years that I've been here and now into my sixth year, we've talked about different ideas of everything from high-performance government to a concept of policy governance, but because there are different interpretations of what policy governance means, we haven't done anything as elaborate as to do a presentation on policy governance and what that means, what the boundary between administration and management is, and how you define that. And over the last 5 years, for the most part, we've kind of established where we think administration starts and stops and where policy starts and stops. But every now and then, we have a little bit of friction around, did we define that clearly? Did we give staff clear direction? Did the administrator take more authority than we would have liked, or should he have brought a decision to us earlier? How are those kinds of things established? And so in talking about that with the chairman and talking with Tara Johnson, who had seen Dr. Walker speak and present to the Western Wisconsin Cares Board, we thought it would be an opportunity, since they were so pleased with his presentation, to bring him tonight to give us a presentation, rather than the county administrator always trying to present what I think and how I understand and how I interpret my role and your role as board members, that it might be best to have an outsider kind of listen to you on how we define those roles and where we go. And by the way, that's a clear illustration of what I understood to be policy governance. When I worked in Burnsville prior to working for you, we ended up bringing in basically the guru of policy governance, Dr. John Carver, and he ended up going through with our five-member council a whole definition of what policy governance was, defining ends, outcomes, and we did a great deal of work with that. But again, that's with five members. That's in a different state, a different parameter. And so my understanding of what policy governance might be is different than what the school board here thinks it might be. It may be different than what Western Wisconsin Cares interprets it to be. It may be different at the end of this day or this evening session than what you interpret it to be. I always want to make sure that we're anticipating problems and that we're trying to be proactive in defining what those boundaries are so that I get better direction from you and that I'm not going off in a direction that you don't want this organization to go. So 5 years in seems like a good time to do that. And Steve, when I talked about this calendar year as a priority, was this would be a good time to do that. So I don't know, Steve, if maybe you've got some additional items to touch on.
Well, just one thing, and that is that you'll notice that the next item on the agenda is discussion with county board. So this is not just a we're going to talk to you or Dr. Walker is going to talk to you. This is a discussion that his talk leads into, and then it'll actually be continued tomorrow morning with a smaller group of people to try to polish it even more.
And just to emphasize that, the follow-up to this tonight, as we take in what people are saying and what your concerns are, that work group, and anybody's welcome to go, is from 9 to noon tomorrow in room 3220. Any board member who's not part of that group can come. Will be what's the next resolutions, what's the next ordinance, what's the next steps and direction we should take that, again, more clearly establish these boundaries so that it becomes an ongoing dialogue to try to make sure that as your chief administrator, I'm taking your direction on defining what those are, and if we're not hitting the mark, how do we make sure that we do, and how do we keep bringing that information back to you? So I'll just give, maybe Terry, you'd like to give more of an introduction of Dr. Walker. Okay. Dr. Walker is from St. Louis, Missouri. He's a consultant that works in this area. Hopefully he'll give you a little bit more background, a little bit more introduction. Very reasonably cost of the investment for him to come and visit with us, as well as we've just heard real positive things. And if you do want to go to his website, we sent out a two-pager on boundary management. So if you're interested in more research, if this tickles your interest on policy governance and those types of things, Dr. Walker's been kind enough to come up here and help give us some guidance on this. Anything else? Why don't we turn it over to Dr. Walker? Thanks, Lynn.
Can you hear me? I can hear me. So you must be able to hear me. Let me tell you about who I am and then kind of why I'm here and my expectations for this meeting, what I hope we get done by, at least by the end of tonight. Worked with policy governance for well over 20 years at this point. Have taken over 100 boards, organizations through what Steve outlined as a process of writing a whole manual, and have in literally hundreds and hundreds of organizations I've talked through with similarly to what we're going to talk about tonight. Have sat with John Carver, have sat with Miriam, his wife, gone through their training, some of their training, not all of their training. And I'm going to try to impart at least my kind of wisdom to you, not only my wisdom about policy governance, but my wisdom about how groups work and organizations work. The objective tonight isn't to get you to adopt what policy governance is, but for you to hear some of the themes and ideas about a process that allows organizations to govern better. If you like some of the things that you hear and you're able to apply them in future settings, I would tell you I think we have had a successful evening. Whether you adopt policy governance as the way to govern, I don't really, that isn't what I'm about tonight, and I hope that you're not about tonight. I hope you're going to ask a bunch of questions. I hope you're going to ask for a bunch of insights. I hope you learn a whole bunch of kinds of things. Whether you like them or not isn't it. But if you walk out of here learning a whole different way of kind of framing and seeing your job and role, we had a good evening. Okay. Steve is going to, my understanding, Steve is going to identify, not that Steve, that Steve. Two Steves here, right? Going to I pick people if there's questions. Thank you,
yeah,
Linda. Okay. Obviously, I'm not going to know everybody's name. I'll try to remember what I just said, but this is a bit of a new method of questions and answers for you. And as my kids would tell you, I'm very independent and like to do my own thing. So what else would be helpful? All right. Let's work through the handouts. And the hope I can make this work. Linda, we practice, but that doesn't mean that it will do what I think it's going to do. What's governance? Hey, there it is. Oh, okay. Don't pull it more than once, right? Is that the rule? Is that back? No? Are you going back for me? Yes, go back to the first slide. There, perfect. Okay, let's just so and kind of Steve alluded to this is that there's some kind of definitional things that we need to talk through first, and I'm going to give you mine. You get yours, but we're going to work with mine. Okay, and if we're out of sync, then I need you to kind of tell me what you think yours are. But we're going to stay with my language. It'll be a lot easier. Otherwise, we're going to have 35, 36 definitional things. When I leave here, you can use any definition you want, but for tonight, they're my definitions. So what's governance? It's really the authority, responsibility, and the accountability for the whole organization. All other level, and the kind of the key word here is the whole organization. All other levels of authority and responsibility and accountability are what is called management. Okay, so Steve is management, and guess who governs here? You all govern, because everything falls to you all. Absolutely everything falls to you all. So when we're talking about govern, you are the body that governs. And if nobody's governing, who's not doing their job? You all, right.
But we usually blame Steve anyway.
Yes, that usually happens too, doesn't it? Okay, so another definitions. What do I mean by, when I say responsibility, I'm talking about task and results. When I'm talking about authority, I'm talking about who has the right to make a decision. And here's a bit of a nuance. When I talk about accountability, I'm talking about who has the responsibility to fix something.
And I would tell you that most people in most management, most governance structures do not talk about accountability, and they particularly don't talk about it in the way that I'm going to talk about what I mean by accountability. When my kids were growing up, and here's the neat thing, is I've been in practice for 29 years, and I work with organizations exclusively, but I've never managed anybody other than my kids, and I'll admit that right front. And they would tell you that I didn't manage them either. That was I just thought I was managing them. But when they were growing up, they used to leave their shoes all over the place. And so I came to the bright idea here that if they were leaving their shoes and I had to pick them up, then if I was picking them up, they must be mine, right? And if they're my shoes, I can put them wherever I want to put them, not necessarily back in their rooms. So if I'm going to make somebody account, then it dawned on me, gee, guess what? I must be accountable for picking up their shoes. And I wasn't really forcing them to be accountable for that process. So part of what policy governance does is it helps organizations focus on who has to fix it. Okay? Who has to fix it? Who owns that piece of it? We're really good at assigning tasks and results. We're really good at assigning authority. We're not so hot at assigning accountability. And most organizations, and I will also argue that most managers, actually don't make people accountable. They make them unaccountable. Is that grammatically correct? Unaccountable? We tend to strip accountability from people by making them not have to fix things. So let's talk about the old approach, which is typically pragmatic and in kind of Carver's stuff, the guy that authored Created Policy Governance. He doesn't really have a name for the old one. The old method, my definition is really it's pragmatic governance. We're doing whatever works at the time is what most organizations will do. And you usually know that pragmatic governance is happening when there are lots of meetings, there's officers, and there tends to be little structure or organization beyond those kinds of things. Problem solving is usually based on individual situations and really rather than on any kind of long-term broader perspective. And what Carver did was he designed a different way to approach governance, particularly for organizations, all kinds of organizations, but organizations that are struggling with the process of making this work for themselves. Policy governance, and I had this conversation actually with a couple people before we got started, is not complicated. It's actually, there's really only two refinements that policy governance changes in the kind of the normal way of approaching your job. The first one has to do with purpose, and the second one has to do with delegation. All policy governance falls into these, everything that policy governance is about falls into these two different kind of approaches, one in terms of purpose and the second in terms of delegation. The first refinement in terms of purpose is that instead of talking about kind of mission and vision and all of those things that we have all grown up with in terms of kind of strategic managing processes, policy governance talks about ends. And what is an end? Well, first of all, whom does the board serve? That's a question for an organization. And to get to kind of this definition of what an end is, I need to kind of give you a little bit of structure here. The board works for the organization, or at least helps direct where the organization is going. On top of that, we have moral owners and investors. And if you had to guess who the moral owners and investors for your organization are, who are they? Taxpayers, absolutely. Okay. Very much like a stock-held organization, they expect some kind of return, don't they? I mean, if you think about the stock-held organization, they've entrusted you with a bunch of assets, right? And the right to make decisions, correct? And they're expecting some kind of return. And an end is really what that return is. And that end is that there's some, this, and although this looks like kind of the traditional diagram where we have customers at the bottom, that does it, that is not what this is. At the bottom of this is the this county government is designed to benefit some group of people in some kind of way, and that is the return. Okay? So instead of just figuring a mission and vision, your job becomes one of defining what the end of the organization is. How are your citizens it doesn't necessarily have to be this definition, but how are your citizens better off because you all existed? How are their lives better 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now? How did they benefit in some kind of way because your organization is here? Did you accomplish that? Did you hold your administrator accountable for that and all the subsidiary organizations that you have? Were they able to accomplish it? And how do you know that has occurred? Okay. There's another body out here that we probably will end up talking about, which is partners, which is you're working with. In fact, some of the discussion that you had before I came up here, you really were talking about partners. So why are you here, and who's supposed to benefit, and what does that benefit look like, and how do you know that you've accomplished that is a much more exacting way of holding your organization accountable than the traditional strategic approach, which says we've got a mission, we've got a vision, we've got some objectives, we've got some strategies, and we have some action plans about how to accomplish that. In many ways, an end is an independent way to force the organization to achieve a set of results. Okay, most organizations tend to look at all of their means and don't really recognize that they are trying to optimize their end results. And this is my quick kind of graphic. When you're growing plants, what do you have to have? You have to have dirt, right? You got to have chemicals, correct?
No.
Okay, phosphate. What are the maybe?
Nutrient.
Thank you. Very good. See, nutrient.
We should have warned you before you started.
Yeah.
This is a tough group.
Nutrients. You have got to have seeds and what's the other one? Water. Actually, I need sunshine up here. Very good. Okay. I'm not a biologist. I'm a psychologist. Okay. Nutrients, sun. Stay with my analogy. Don't get too worked up about nutrients and sun. If you focus on the means, you may actually minimize the ends. If you focus on, and I will use your chemicals and nutrients piece here, if you get too worried about minimizing the nutrients or maximizing the nutrients, you may actually end up with less plant life than if you hadn't focused on that. Okay? Here's a quick quiz for you. The average plant that you buy at a store and bring home dies in 3 weeks. You know why?
Because you smoke?
No. The average plant that is bought home. Okay, did I stray on nutrients? Was that very good? I'm impressed. That's exactly right. The average plant dies in 3 weeks, and the vast majority of those die from overwatering. Okay? The point here is if you measure water usage on your plant, you succeeded when you've overwatered it, right? Right? So it's important to measure the ends, not just the means and the process. And if we don't define what the end is, and we're not clear about what it is that we're trying to get the organization to grow, we will spend a whole lot of time on and really I'll use kind of classical quality language here. We will sub-optimize the ends because we have focused on the things that we need to pay attention to, but it is the balance of the use of those things and its ability to produce the positive difference that the organization has chosen to make to the lives of the people. Okay? Here's the deal. Nobody tells you what the ends for this organization are. You have to decide. You can get input from the taxpayers, but to be honest, if you thought 35 people in this room was a lot, that's an even bigger and differentiated voice too. Should you listen to them? Absolutely. But you're still going to have to decide what this organization is supposed to produce, at least in policy governance when you're talking about it. And it's different than the traditional way of governing. So are people better off? Are they better off in the way that we decided that they needed to be better off? Do we have programs and services that are causing their lives to be changed in the way that we decided? Do we get reports back that help us understand that's happening? Okay? So that one of the tasks and one of the changes of policy governance is it shifts this focus from a less arduous way of demanding accountability and changing in lives to one that really says, this is it, this is what we want, is it happening, and keep producing what it is that we want to have happen for the organization. This little slide comes directly from the quality movement. It's helpful in the sense that you can kind of separate what it is you're doing, what you're focusing on, and it helps figure out what an end is. You've got resources, inputs, that's all the dollars and buildings and people and all the things that you've had to work with. Your organization is going to modify those resources in some kind of way. You're going to produce products, services, and programs, and those products and services and programs are going to have some kind of effect on people. If you have more products, services, and programs, does that necessarily mean you're going to have a greater effect on people? I can be quiet till I hear at least some kind of answer. No. Okay. Yeah, the answer's no. Here's an interesting point as well, is that we've got means on the left and ends on the right, and most goals are either outputs or ends. And I'm going to argue, in most organizations that I look at, 99% of goals are means and less than 1% are ends. Forget policy governance or not, few organizations really focus on ends.
Can you give an example of a governmental entity like the county, what an end would be, and compare it to a means? If we say we want to hold down taxes, for example, is that a means or is that an end?
It's a great question.
While you're here, give us the answer.
Okay. Unfortunately, when I first went into practice, I'm sorry, I'm going to do two little stories because it's helpful. Or at least I like to tell them, one or the other. It's going to be a means, and if I have a conclusion, it'll be an end. It's helpful in this sense. When I first started consulting, I went to lunch with who ended up being my longest client. I worked with him for over 20 years. And every question he asked me, I said yes and no to. Okay? And I said yes and no, and partly because it's not the right. Finally, at the end, he said, "Do you have any other answer other than yes and no?" And I said, "Well, if you would start asking the right questions, I could give you better answers." And sorry, Steve, but that's.
Did you go to law school at some point too?
I'm a consultant. Yes, that is. All right. So here's the question is, okay, what lowering taxes is to do what? Lowering taxes is actually on the left side, but what is it that you wanted to accomplish with it is the question. Okay? Lowering taxes is a means. It's clearly a means. What's supposed to happen to people because you lowered their taxes?
We get reelected.
So you were
that too is a means. Or maybe an end for you, but nobody else.
So you heard the proclamation that we passed a little while ago, and it has broad general statements like counties provide services that make America's communities stronger, safer places.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's pretty vague, but it's a good result. So is that is that an end?
Yeah.
Or is that not specific enough? Or too specific?
It's an end. It's not specific enough, but it's definitely an end.
Okay.
I can measure, and I could measure safer. I mean, you know, I probably measure it multiple different ways, but yes, I could, you know. Is it the right end? Don't know that. The only right end is the one in which you all would choose, okay? But it's definitely an end. The community is safer.
Tara.
Sorry.
So back to your question about lower taxes as a means, an end, a corollary end might be something like allowing people to stay in their homes because they can afford to stay in their homes as the end, and
right.
The keeping taxes low is a means to accomplish that.
Yes, absolutely. The lowering taxes is one of those that I would actually say is kind of in the middle there. It's not really clear whether it's an output or a means or an end. So there's a need to clarify what you're trying to accomplish for it. And it's the kind of statement that we all think we know what the result is, but actually I would make a bet if we sat here in this room and ask what was the result that you wanted to have by lowering taxes, we would not all be in the same place. Okay? Yes, we may have come to an agreement on this action, but we didn't come, you all did not come together as a group to decide what that was. And in fact, if you knew what the end was, you may be able to find 10 or 12 other things that you could do that would actually, and I'll use Tara's example, keep people in their homes. Okay. Now my other story. I did say there were two. Okay. This one actually, this comes from an article out of the Harvard Business Review, and I'm going to do the quick study, which is that in Peru, there was a part, and the name of this article was even nonprofits need a bottom line. And the story was about an individual who had spent 10 years of his life working in the mountains of Peru building schoolhouses. Okay. And the good news and bad news is that at the beginning of his 10 years of building schoolhouses, they had measured the educational level of the students. 10 years later, he had built 50, 60, I don't know, 100 schoolhouses, and they measured the educational level of the children in the communities. Do you know what the difference was?
None.
Okay? So, back to taxes. Lowering taxes, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah.
Yes and no, right? Yes and no. Yeah, so the question is, what is it we're trying to accomplish? And it isn't about the taxes, it's what are we trying to accomplish? And what are we trying to get to? And only you as a body can make that decision. Okay, only you as a body can make that decision. Okay, are we
done?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said something that most people don't look at the end. I'm going to have to disagree with you real strongly on that. I've been on a lot of committees. I farm for a living. I look every day at the end result, not what's happening. and I try to put everything in perspective as I get to that end. You have to look forward to the end. In land conservation, what do you accomplish? You can spend a lot of money, but you better be accomplishing something, which is an end result. You take care of the needy people in this county. You look at the end result. What have you accomplished with helping those people that can't help themselves? You try to persuade me that I'm not looking at the end, and I'll disagree with you. Now tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Yeah. Yes and no. Yeah, first of all, and I will go back to my kids, the objective here isn't for you and I to agree. Our experiences are vastly different, and I will acknowledge that completely. So I will tell you that the organizations in which I look and I deal with, that often the things that they're looking at that they think are ends are not ends, okay? I can tell you numbers of organizations where we've sat down and we look through their board packets, and I'm looking for the ends. I'm looking for the report on the ends. There is no report on, and I'm gonna forget the language, but if this is something that's really that important, why isn't this up front? And where's the actual data that shows me that people are better off in however they have defined this, okay? And I'll be honest with you, most of the time, that data is not there. And without that data, guess what? When I come back to accountability, there is no accountability. Why? Because without data, you can't tell me that something has to be fixed, and without something being fixed, there is no accountability. So I applaud good efforts. I applaud good hearts. I applaud all of that. But that doesn't say people's lives have been changed, okay? And sometimes, to be honest with you, sometimes you can't measure some of this stuff, okay? Sorry, almost called on somebody. All right, well, you don't have to.
Done.
You don't have to. That my objective today isn't to get you to agree with me. And I'm also not going to argue. I do want you to understand where we differ. Absolutely want you to understand where we differ. But my objective is not for you to walk out of here thinking we are all in agreement.
We're going to go from one pot stirrer to a different pot stirrer. John Menninger.
Yeah, I thought maybe we were going to have questions at the end, but let me do it now. In this thing we're doing right here, okay, a goal is like reducing poverty.
Yeah.
That's a goal.
Yeah.
But we find out that actually poverty has increased.
Yeah.
Now, that's the end result. But under your model, do you have to be successful or is failure an option? I mean, your goal is to reduce poverty, but you wind up in more people in poverty.
Yeah.
That's the end result.
Kind of suggests maybe you ought to have done something different.
Well, or maybe you couldn't.
Yeah.
You don't have the resources.
Yeah, well.
Or you got more people coming in.
But, okay. Yeah.
Do you have to have success for this to work or what?
Well, I'm going to give you another story, and I'm going to give you another example, because often some of these things are we're less in poverty than we would have been if we had done nothing. Okay, and I actually can track that stuff to other communities that are doing other things. We don't want to go any. You know, if the curve is heading down and we're all heading down at the same level, but we do something and we head at a less. Right. We succeeded. Absolutely. That's a success. Okay. The other piece is also, I'll come back to this article in terms of even nonprofits need a bottom line. The second story that I didn't tell you about was the Salvation Army, and I think it was in Cleveland, Ohio, was working with at-risk male youths. And they were working with these men, and trying to keep them out of jail. And they spent a lot of money, and they had these great programs. And they looked at men that they were working with that went into jail. They measured the ones that they were working with, and then they had obviously a control group that they weren't working with, and guess what the difference was between the ones that they worked with and the ones that they didn't work with? None. Okay? So why spend that money, right? So what they did was they took that money and they worked with those men that had been in jail one time, and their objective was to keep them from going out. And you know what? They had a 90% success rate, or at least I've got the statistics wrong. That doesn't make any sense to me after I say that. And you've all heard Mark Twain's. Have you heard Mark Twain's? You know, 85% of statistics are made up on the spot. Okay. So, and I'm realizing the 90%, but they made a huge significant difference between the youth that they were working with and the youth that they were not. So, is it important? Absolutely. You know what? If you say we're going to reduce poverty and you don't, that in and of itself is a learning experience, and it says do something different. That's helpful. That's good. There's nothing wrong. To not measure it and continue to spend the money and use the resources is not a good thing. Okay. Is this a helpful conversation?
Ralph.
Okay.
Well, what if you have an end whose primary factors are beyond your control? You know, we may impact it marginally or minimally, but other factors outside the organization actually control it more than we do.
Yeah. I will answer this in two ways. One, you ought to pick something. This is a classic. I'm going to get to this in a kind of a backdoor piece here, because there's a bigger lesson in this process. Is that everybody, and traditionally in organizations, people want to be held accountable for only the things for which they have total control. And obviously, I'm underlining total control. Who in this room has total control over anything? None. Okay? So that's just not. First of all, that's not a possibility. So in life, we do not have total control over literally anything. We may have 99.999% of control over most of the things we do ourselves, but even in that case, we do not have total control. And yet, on the other end of that perspective, there are very few things over which we have absolutely no control. Okay? So now it gets down to a definitional question of we should pick and define ends over the things over which we think we have enough control. And from the start, we should decide, do we have enough? Can we eliminate poverty? No. Will we eliminate war? No. Can we reduce them? Maybe. Some places, with some people, with some segments, and let's get clear about that, because guess what? If you're not clear, is Steve clear? No. So if you want to accomplish that one little bit of good, you got to get it clear. And it's got to, am I answering your question? Okay. Sorry, Steve.
Maureen?
And don't we pretty much have a clear vision of what we're doing, going back to this proclamation where counties provide safer places to live and raise families? They police our streets. They fight fires. They save lives in hospitals. Those are all ends, aren't they?
Fighting fires is not.
Okay. Keeping families healthy, repairing bridges, plowing snow, helping troubled youth. Those are all ends, aren't they? Or is that
bridges
mission?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a mix of stuff, okay? Yes, and I mean, why do you need bridges? What's the result? Don't get your feet wet. People have fewer feet than wet feet. Now, look, the answer is it's a mix. Some of them are. Do you measure those things? So some are ends. Yeah, okay.
But my point is merely that we know why we're here. We all have the same desire in the end to do all of these.
Oh, I would disagree
things.
With that.
Is that too idealistic?
Yeah. Here's where. Okay, let me take your point, and I'm sorry. Who is it, Ralph? What happens is now it gets tough because it's pretty nice when we say we want to do, you know, apple pie and absolutely all the good things, but that's not what you can't. First of all, your resources are limited, aren't they? And now what are the few good things that we definitely want to make sure have happen? And that's, guess who gets to decide that tough question? You all do. Okay? You all do.
So really what you're saying is if we're going to have disagreements, we should fight over what the ends should be rather than what the means should be. We should decide, is it more important for us to have good highways or fewer kids in poverty, for example? And once we've decided that outcome, then we can figure out how to get to that.
Yeah, actually, good highways, I would argue, is a means.
Okay.
And almost by definition, anything that doesn't have people in it is a means. Okay. Now there are some special situations, but for a county government, it's going to always be people. There are special organizations where yes, I mean you can take an art organization where the art itself is the end. That's not going to be true here. Okay. So what do good roads allow you? What happens to people because you have good roads? Good commerce, right. There's more business going on. People, it's sprawl, right? and I rest my case. And that's the discussion. So what's good and bad, okay? And if what's good and bad? How much is what? Okay, you got what an end is, right? Okay. Okay, so what are not ends? They are not assets, budgets, programs, services, size, buildings, logos, staff, plan, strategy, or anything that has to do with the organization. Okay? So what would be, let's take a city government. What would be some example of ends for a city government? And God, by the way, these would fit with you. What? I didn't hear what.
Yeah, he threw out an inside joke.
Must have been. Okay. What would not be some city, what would be things that city government would look at but are really not an end? Whether they have ambulance, that's good, yeah, whether they have ambulance service. Prompt garbage pickup, absolutely. Number of policemen. What would be some city government? Some things that would be an end for a city government.
Reduction in crime.
Okay. You're kind of there. Yeah, that's close enough. I won't.
If we say ambulances are not, then maybe an end that is fewer people dying between having a heart attack and getting to the hospital.
Absolutely. Right. Okay, let's take a school. What would be things that they typically would kind of have on their list of goals and things to accomplish but are really not an end? What would be a school system?
Teacher-pupil ratios?
Teacher-pupil, right.
Graduation
rates, okay. What else? Yeah, that whole curriculum focus kind of stuff, absolutely. DARE pro, whether they have a DARE program. What would be an end for them?
High graduation rates.
Okay. And here's the thing, is graduation rates is one of those things that's kind of in between and not.
Okay? And if you heard, we already had graduation in a knot, now we're saying it is. That's one of, it is one of those that when they graduate, what here's when a student graduates, what happens to them because of that? Okay, so getting jobs is a better, is a clearer definition of what graduation does. Okay? That's only one of the things that you might graduate and have happen to you. What other things might happen? Informed citizen. Yeah. Actually, schools are our citizen builders, aren't they? So we would like them to be good citizens when they come out of there, right? What other things might? One more. Safe. They're safe. The kids are safe, right? Okay. So we have an organizational purpose that changes. One is that we're going to talk about ends instead of mission, vision, purpose, all those things that we typically have had. And there's really three elements to it. One, it's a group of people. There's some benefit that they receive. And there really is some kind of acceptable, and this is kind of classical Carver definition, and there's some acceptable level of cost for the benefits produced. So given what we thought we would pay for this thing to happen, are we getting as much as we thought we would get? Ends, and here's an important piece, ends are different and independent from means. Okay? What does that mean? That means they're either an end or a mean, and they aren't both. And means cause ends to happen. It's a cause-effect relationship between means and ends. All right. Second refinement in policy governance is really around delegation, and it has to do with what policy governance calls limitations. Everybody familiar with Sherlock Holmes? Okay. How could you grow up in America and not know who Sherlock, even though he's an English guy, you could... Okay. What's employed in policy governance is called a reverse proof. In many of Sherlock Holmes' stories, there's usually a number of criminals or suspects for a crime, not usually a lot of criminals, but there's usually a number of suspects for a crime. And so let's say there's three suspects for this particular crime. Sherlock Holmes can't prove who did it. Sherlock Holmes can prove two people didn't do it. So what does that mean? The last person. So it isn't a direct proof. It's what's called a reverse proof. Okay? Pretty simple, pretty easy. Embedded in policy governance, and in particular the way in which it goes about delegation, is what's called, is this reverse proof process is actively employed. Okay.
Yeah, Audrey.
Can you illustrate what a reverse proof might be in relation to a governmental body like we are?
Yes, that's
please.
Very good. Just hang on and watch the slides.
Okay,
because that's
thank
exactly
you.
What we're.
That's the end, right?
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to do is take this, and I mean, if you've got what a reverse proof is, I'm going to use it about four times in a direct application to. I mean, there's still some conceptual, but it really has to do with how policy governance applies to almost any decision-making process of groups, okay? In fact, if I don't get it, come back to me and I'll help you. We'll help get to where we need. Okay, so what is a mean? What's a means in policy governance? And those, I know you're reading ahead in your charts, so, okay? But I handed them out because even though I may spoil some of the magic of my PowerPoint slide, you will learn more. Okay. So what is a means? It's anything that is not an end. Okay. Who defines what ends are? And if you even if something looks like an end, but you didn't pick it as an end, is it an end? No. So it must be a. Very good. You guys, perfect. A plus. Okay. There are two types of means. What are they? Board means and executive means. And how do I know what an executive means is? I'm struggling with the words here. Just kind of, my diction does not want to say means. Okay, board means. So if I define what a board means is, how do I know what the executive means are? Everything that's left. Okay. So anything that is not a board means must be, by definition, an executive means. What is that? What is that? Let me translate that to the question back here. If you haven't said it's yours, whose is it? The executives. Right. This is not the traditional way of delegating. The traditional way of delegating starts with whom? It usually starts with the executive. Okay? So this is a different way of thinking about how you're delegating responsibility, authority, and accountability. So we're essentially saying if you can make a list that this is your stuff, anything that is not on the list must fall to Steve, right. To Steve. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that all executive means are acceptable, does it? Right? We didn't cut this huge swatch of things that Steve can do anything he wants to. Okay. So what we do next is that we define what are unacceptable means. There's two philosophies around delegation. One is called approval, and the other has to do with limitations. Approval essentially says do nothing unless I've given you permission. And for those of you that have management background, this is the traditional theory X approach. Limitation really takes a different stance. It says do whatever it takes to achieve the ends, unless restricted or required. In fact, if we tell you not to do it, you can't do it, everything else is okay. So delegation really ends up saying, look, here's our job, you have everything else, and here's all the things you can't do, and that means if we haven't told you you can't do it, and it's not ours, then you must have the right to do it. You do not have to ask us for permission. Is a wildly different way of thinking about how to make decisions. Okay. The old model, I don't know why my lines didn't sign it. The old model says, look, we usually approve what the executive has done. That's the permission model, correct, where the executive comes and says, I want to do this. You all say yes, right? The problem with it is it doesn't usually take very long for the question mark to be outside of the bounds, right? And so that question mark moves, and now you have to struggle with how far away from what we said was okay is too far away, and accountability gets lost, because if accountability is to fix, and we're already outside of the lines, but it's now not clear that it needs to be fixed because of the way in which you approached it, no one is fixing things. Here's a great example. You all approve the budget. I'm assuming you approve the budget. Is that correct? Okay. You know how long it takes for you to be off the budget? About 1 day, 1 minute, the first dollar that's spent. Okay. How far off of the budget requires fixing the budget? I'm sorry? 20,000? Is it defined that well defined? No, you have 20,000 to fix it. Yeah, he can fix it to 20,000. And if it's over 20,000, yeah. But who said it had to be fixed? Okay. Finance. Yes, he's got to fix it. See how this ball rolls? Okay. Do you understand my point? How far off the line does it have to go before something happens? Any project that gets approved, how far into the project does it get changed before you've approved it? What part of that project did you approve? All of it? Every single piece? In some cases? What are the odds that they do everything that you've approved? Got to be flexible, and that is my point. So my point ends up being that when you do it in the traditional way, where you've only given them permission, but you haven't said, and you haven't really said, here are the things that are not okay, you haven't given them enough room to make all the decisions that they could make, and you really set up what's called a parent-child relationship, and the old classical, you know, it's better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. And in policy governance, they actually set up there is neither in policy governance, because we're already telling you what you can and can't do. Okay. Policy governance sets up the old classical approval syndrome, which tends to be reactive, tends to be highly document driven, tend to get lots and lots of documents. You don't get lots of documents.
You just said policy governance sets.
I'm sorry. Thank you. The traditional approach, pragmatic approach, tends to drive what's called an approval syndrome, which is reactive. All the information's coming to you. You aren't ahead of the game. There tends to be lots of it. There tends to be what's called mental misdirection, which means the easier the decision is, the more likely you're going to spend a lot of time on it. Okay? Here's a rule of thumb. If you understand the question, it's probably not yours. Okay? If you already know the answer, it's definitely not yours. Okay? The stuff you should be struggling with are the thing you should be I chided Steve on his question, but that is that's what governance is about. It's really struggling with what is the right question here before we even strive to find what the answer is. If you all know what the answer is, you probably should have delegated it. If you already know what it is, you probably should have delegated it. Classical example, I have a financial institution in St. Louis that I worked with. They were buying $1.5 million building. They spent 5 minutes on that decision, the board. 14 of them. The next item was an in-ground water sprinkling system for $5,000. They spent 45 minutes on that decision.
We never do that here.
No. Okay. I came back the next month and somebody raised their hand and said, what are we going to do with that 8-foot by 8-foot piece of ground there by the parking lot that we used to have the bushes in, and the bushes are dead? They spent an hour and a half deciding what kind of flowers they were going to plant in it. Okay? Good people. Actually, this was a credit union that was, the people on the board were school administrators. So these were not unknowledgeable people. These were, well, okay. Sorry. Okay, nutrients, school administrators. You know what they did with it? I mean, I've been on boards and done exactly the same thing, so I'm not immune to this myself. So they spent a whole bunch of time deciding, you know, the flowers, pansies, and I mean all kinds of discussion around this. The next thing they did, what somebody raised their hand, who can tell me what they decided to do after this discussion? Form a committee. Right. No, they formed a committee, so now we get to talk about it even more. I mean, okay? So this stuff happens. So we have an approval syndrome, which is mental misdirection, and I'm serious. If you know the answer, it probably isn't yours. In fact, it definitely isn't yours, and if you even understand the question, it probably isn't yours. Okay?
Jeff.
You said it was mental misdirect.
Yeah.
A little louder, Jeff.
They had a lot of information. The other things were thrown at them, and, oh, we got to make a decision on this. They didn't have any information, so I can see where that came from.
It could easily be that. The next piece is leaky accountability. It's unclear when you have approval, and I was going back to my example of when you approve a project, and it needs to change. The fact that you've signed off on it, now who owns that? And if it doesn't quite turn out the way that it was that you would like it to turn out, who owns the fix and who's supposed to make the change? And the fact that everything that you approve makes it less and less likely that it's clear who has to fix something and make it work. What happens is you usually have good people, and you usually trust them. And they usually do that, but that accountability is still less than what it usually than what it could be. And corrective actions come from somewhere but it's not clear who's supposed to make that happen. So we have in policy governance a different approach, which has ends. Everything else is a means. We've got board means. Everything else is an executive mean. We've got unacceptable executive means, and that means that everything else, by definition, is an acceptable executive mean. Okay. Policy governance tends to break those kind of limitations into these areas, but there's certainly other areas or different ways of framing it. Financial performance, treatment of customers or citizens, you know, treatment of staff, communication and support to the board, operational service products, compensation and benefits. Physical asset management planning, but nothing forces it into there. It also suggests that the definition of that limitation is to bring it down to where any reasonable interpretation is, that where you write those lines at are up to you. And the idea is that we want anything, we stop at the point where any reasonable interpretation is okay. So instead of starting with, here's what we need to do, let's define what we don't want to have happen or must do. And if we would accept anything beyond that or any further definition of it, any reasonable interpretation of what we've said, that is the point in which we ought to stop. Okay. Policy governance provides a process in which the board ends up with a voice. That voice is pretty clear and distinct. And it becomes a policy manual, and it gets written down. Good governing bodies write stuff down. Forget whether it's in a policy governance policy manual, but good governing bodies write stuff down and review it and come back to it. Policy governance suggests a policy manual, basically says, look, we're going to talk about what our purpose is, which is ends. We're going to talk about what our board means, what are the things that we do in terms of the way we manage ourselves and the way in which we relate with the executive. And then we're going to tell the executive all the things that they can't do. And what does this do for us? It allows us to do what's called monitoring. Monitoring says, look, we're going to come back and make sure that all the conditions that we said weren't okay don't exist, and all the ends that we wanted to achieve do exist. And we can do that because now we have clarity about what those boundaries are and what it was. We said that this was unacceptable. Let's make sure the performance is happening somewhere in the middle there. And as long as it stays inside that kind of piece of that pie, we know we're okay. Individually, we may have chosen something different. I may have picked red or yellow, but color of the car that we have may make no difference at all, as long as we know that we have a car that gets us to all the places that we need to get to. So monitoring allows us to create accountability, because now I have something that I can come back to and tell which side of this am I on. This comes back to, did we reduce poverty? Did we accomplish all the good that we thought we were going to accomplish? And we have clarity about who's supposed to create the fixes or create changes to make sure that those things happen. In the typical governing processes, there's not absolutely none, but there's very little monitoring that happens. Why? Because we don't have clear boundaries. Get a lot of reports, but we don't have reports that actually force or cause corrective actions to happen. Okay.
All right, I have a question.
Good.
That all sounds really nice.
Yep.
However, then there's the real world.
Yes.
How, when we set the limit, when we set the limitations, we're not omniscient. So how do we know where to draw those lines? Let me give you an example. I'm going to pick on Jeff, who is one of our very best department heads. That's why I can pick on him. We have talked repeatedly, or I have, their administration, we're politics, policy, and so forth. We had an issue that came up a while ago where we have two communities fighting with each other. Dennis here happens to be one of those communities, and then we have the city of Onalaska. And I had repeatedly been telling both sides, we're not involved. We're not taking sides, one or the other. I had told Dennis half a dozen times at least that we're not taking sides. Doing what he has done for many, many years, probably 20 or so, when the state asked for the county's input on the issue of this boundary dispute, Jeff wrote a letter, which appeared to take sides, which is what I had said we weren't going to do. So I didn't know he sent those letters out. I mean, I don't know a lot of stuff that goes on around here. How could I, in advance, have said, here is a limit, if I don't even know in the first place that the departments have a role in that kind of thing? I mean, that's just one example. We're dealing with those kinds of things all the time. If we don't know what all is going to happen because we're part-timers, how do we set those limits? And that's not a yes or no answer. That's a how do we
He
answer?
Saw it coming, didn't he? Well, in the real world, you aren't going to know all the limits. Okay, I mean, that's just the matter. The fact is, you aren't going to know what all the limits are.
Well, I mean, we have a real easy one. If we're going to read about it in the paper, we better hear about it before that. We've said that for a long time, and I think staff understands that real clearly. Okay, but that's kind of vague too.
Okay, but
then. Since then, we've said anything about annexations that gets communicated out of here is a board means and has to go back through the committee and the board before that communication goes out. When that communication was done that you gave us that direction, we thought we were following policy as established by the board. You clarified that that wasn't the case. Since then, that's the limitation. If you go back to that pie chart, you have defined it through discussion or motion or whatever, that's a board means. We will not have another letter that goes out of this organization on annexation. No, we've had that discussion. If you set where that boundary is, we will follow it as best we can.
So does that mean that it's trial and error?
Sometimes. But
okay, give it a chance.
How?
We're paying
I want to talk. The beauty of it is it gets written down, and it now lives beyond that issue. That's... Yes, some of it's, I mean, the matter of the fact is some of it's going to be trial and error. But once it gets stated and once it gets, because now you have a model to govern from, it gets clear from what Steve is saying. It becomes, we don't do that. That's a board decision, okay? That's their prerogative to make, and how do we know that? Because they have said that. So you have a structure to start hanging things on.
Okay, that's great until the next issue comes, and then we get honked off again because the person didn't know or we didn't know to tell him. I mean, I don't, and I use Jeff as an example, and I don't blame him because he did what his job is.
Okay.
So how do I know? Because I really need to assume responsibility.
Here's my rebuttal. Here's my rebuttal. How do you know now?
Learned the hard way, I guess.
Well, okay, so it's okay in the old way, and it's not okay in the new way? I mean,
well, because you're supposed to solve all our problems. What are we paying?
to ask weird questions.
We have a bunch of hands. Can I call in some people?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We'll give you a break here.
Okay, shift the subject
a little bit. Audrey.
Thank you. This is really fascinating because, and I think what's coming out of even that most recent discussion there is the fact that we have not established the ends at this stage, but so that we need to start somewhere and start to develop those ends and the means. The example that I was going to raise was the question of something that happened quite recently too, where the health department decided that they were not going to that they were going to change the policy. Basically, was some of our interpretation of providing foot care at external facilities and bring it back into in-house in here, and it even though it's in the whole scheme of things in the operation of the county, probably is pretty small, but it raised the same type of issue. Is a decision like that a policy decision or is it a management decision? And I suppose there again, it's a situation of where we would need to take the time to start over and start to identify our means and identify the limitations by which staff could make quasi-policy decisions, I suppose. Can you respond,
no,
please?
Yes. What happens is often a lot of things that you're going to address, some of that decision is yours, and some of that decision is not yours. And that by sitting down and saying, if you walk away from here with two things, one of the things I'd like you to walk away with is to start asking first, whose decision is this, rather than what is the right answer here. If you will simply ask that, or what part of this decision, who owns what parts of this decision, you will make significantly better governing process. I've lost my grammar in that sentence, but you will govern significantly better by simply asking who owns this decision. Who's the person responsible for it?
And the second thing?
The second thing is that there isn't, often in these cases, there isn't a right answer. There may be a best answer. And it's usually better to let the people who have to implement it pick it, because then they are invested in it in a way in which those that don't have to implement it are not invested. Guess who implements in this organization? It's not you, it's them.
So we say, we want you to get here, and we let them figure out how to get here.
Absolutely.
Okay. John had his hand up, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I saw that this was some kind of psychological organization, I was kind of nervous about it. But
me too.
Actually, I've been a little impressed. It is more like an upper-level political science class, and I say that with all due respect. I needed some clarification on this one slide on boundary development. I didn't quite understand that unethical, imprudent, and reasonable, whatever that is.
Yeah, I kind of skipped over that on purpose. I'm serious. What it essentially says is, look, on the outside of that ring there's a limitation that says don't do anything unethical or illegal. Or imprudent. Don't do anything dumb, okay? And don't do anything that's not really nice. Well, actually, yes, that's a limitation. That is a general outside ring to this, what I call, Carver calls mixing bowls. I like to think of them as plates. And so the outside ring says, look, the first thing we tell you not to do is don't do anything unethical or imprudent, okay? And that covers a whole bunch of stuff, back to kind of Steve's point about trial and error. Actually, if I have to write you a job description about all the things you must do, it will be significantly longer than the list that I write you that tells you all the things not to do. Okay?
Brad? No, other Brad. This Brad first, then that Brad.
I was just going to ask for a little clarification. So are you suggesting that we as a board of supervisors look at using a traditional approach basically to implement a policy governance. So is that kind of like your whole idea? Because right now all we have to work with is the traditional approach, because that's how we're set up. But
right.
Yet what you're recommending is that we use this policy governance. So are you recommending
yeah.
that we work
First
with
of all, I'm, I, as I started the meeting, if we walk out of here with some just understanding, we've succeeded. So I'm really – and I'm being somewhat facetious, but not really. I'm not really recommending anything. The objective tonight was to give you some information to help you to govern better. And how? Because you have a broader and wider set of knowledge about what governance is. If you want to do it, I think that's great. If you walk out of here and you simply continue and you as a group – learn to ask the question, who owns this decision or who owns what parts of this decision, we've succeeded. You will do better. Forget all the rest of the stuff on the charts.
So then your argument would be that this is just a much more proactive approach to governance than
yeah.
the traditional method.
Yep, 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 yep. I mean, the old stuff worked. I mean, that was around for hundreds of years. I mean, you are all doing it's working, right? It's just... policy governance is easier, better, and, you know, it isn't that the other stuff doesn't work.
I got a bunch of names on the list. I'll keep going down. Brad Paff this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. I thought it was very good. The question I have is, we didn't speak about the legislative process, and I think this is very helpful on the administrative process, but this is a legislative body. And there are 35 of us. And while we do come to consensus on some items, each one of us representing a unique geographic district and people have ends that may not be the same as the next person. How do we make this process fit what you describe here, fit this legislative body, panel that we're part of? But I do want to compliment you for your work here. This is very good. So thank you.
Yeah, I've alluded to it and make it even clearer. A legislative body is simply a decision-making body, right? Okay, so the decisions you make are really determined by the questions you ask. So part of the reason that you don't get to, I mean, if you wanted to determine what ends are, then just simply ask, what are they? I'm not saying this is an easy discussion, but I mean, the reason it doesn't occur is because the traditional approach doesn't raise these questions. It doesn't raise what are the ends. It doesn't raise what are unacceptable means. It doesn't raise what are we going to keep for ourselves. And how are we going to act? So policy governance, is real, despite the policy manual and all the things, what it really is it's a set of questions for a body to govern by. And its ends and limitations, I mean, it really isn't any more complicated than drawing what fit in each of those categories. And once you've done that, even though you're a legislative body, it still works.
But Brad, Steve is... talked about that on a number of occasions in the past where he doesn't work for you or Ann or Bill or me, he works for the group. And so if you have a different attitude about something than me, it doesn't matter that you do or that I do. What matters is what has the body, after going through the legislative process, come up with a decision. That's the thing that counts, or at least the majority of the legislative body.
That's right, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess to take this a step further then, and how do, you know, we as individual legislators bring our own individual ends, who do we bring that to? Do we bring that to you, Steve, or do we bring that to...
Through the committee process.
Through the committee process. So we'd work...
For the most part, it would be.
Yeah, we'd work the traditional committee process in order to...
Because we still have to adopt those ends. We have
right.
to know what our ends are, and the only way we can do it is, as you say, get it in writing.
Right.
And if you get it in writing, then hopefully you've got a majority that have signed on to it. And if it's that hasn't happened, it's really not an end.
Right. And just to conclude, and I do compliment you, Steve, for the two terms that I've been on here, for having these retreats, and we actually talk about what are some of our ends that we hope to accomplish in this two-year term. And those have been very helpful, but those largely have been, well, they are the result of a consensus that's been reached by the 35 members of this body. And so, this management team has attempted to move towards that, and I think it's been successful.
Working down the list, next up is Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation tonight. It's very thought-provoking. And I guess, are we supposed to take out of this that we're supposed to be striving for the end result, and hopefully it's good, but a lot of times things change, and what we think we want the end to be this year, 10 years from now, it may be a different end. So how do we deal with that, and when is the right time to deal with it? And you know, I can see where there are problems then coming up with a right answer.
Yeah. You will accomplish, I mean, organizations accomplish ends, actually achieve them, and then they are no longer an end because we're already, I mean, it's happening, it's done, or what, I mean, and they are reviewed on a regular basis, whatever's appropriate for the organization, okay? And sometimes you may end up saying we can't accomplish, we need to get it tighter, we need to be more defined because we're learning that, you know, no matter what we do, we're having no impact on this, so we need to rethink this.
And so your statement before where you said we should monitor, that seems to me to be really quite important that
right.
we should keep monitoring
right.
things.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you. The policy governance has the little copyright R, so I gather that this is the same model that the La Crosse School District uses. I watched a lot of the board meetings on television when the La Crosse School District was implementing policy governance. I guess that was maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. Those meetings are at least as good as watching Monday Night Football. In a lot of those meetings were crazy. They were just all over the place. No one knew what they were doing. Everyone was laughing, they were crying, but by now, it's settled down, and I think that probably all of the school board members are comfortable with it. There are new members. It's standard. It's a given, and it's successful, I believe. I would love to see us involved in discussion with the La Crosse School District, bring them in, and let's talk to them, and let's have them tell us what their experience has been, and help us along in this process as we discuss this.
Ralph.
Well, just as an aside, we don't have an 8x8 piece of property we need flowers on, so I'm not sure if we need, but being a county, you know, we're subject to a lot of federal and state mandates.
Yep.
And those are ends, aren't they?
Nope.
What are they? We have to accomplish that. Don't we have to comply?
Ends are what you decided.
Okay, but if they decide something, but we have to do it.
And remember that sign, that chart up there where I had partners?
Yeah.
They're a partner.
They're a really big partner.
They are a really big partner. But no, here's one of the beautiful things about policy governance. I must be popping here. Is that no one tells you what your ends are? Only you. I mean, other than your taxpayers, who you listen to, but you are the decisive body here. Nobody tells you what they are going. There may be some things that people are going to tell you have to accomplish. And they may look and feel like an end, but they're not an end. They are not the thing you want to max. Back to my little tree thing where you grow as much. There, that's a trade. We're doing things, or you got to do things, and we got to do enough of it. Hear the enough part. But anything extra we get, we want our stuff, not your stuff, our stuff. Okay?
Ray.
Thank you, sir. The monitoring I find real interesting, and that to me is one of the weaknesses this board has. Is that's the same as oversight?
Yeah, it's oversight with definition of what you're. I mean, it's predefining what the oversight is going to be. Typically, oversight is I can ask anything about anything I want to.
Okay, that's not quite what policy governance is. Policy governance says I'm going to predefine what it is I want to look at, and I'm going to make sure that you are giving me information that tells me that I'm getting what I wanted.
And that is a board.
Absolutely.
Belongs to the board.
Yeah, you can delegate that, but you are the, well, I'll say it differently. You can delegate the reporting of it, but you are the group that is responsible to assure that you, that all performance is within the boundaries.
And okay? Would you consider that an equal amount of resource utilization by the board as to the actual original decision making?
Actually, I would tell you it's more.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, stuff that you're not monitoring is almost useless. You don't know whether you accomplished it or not.
Tara.
Thank you. I want to go back to Supervisor Paff's question about if we have individual ends, to his set of questions about the legislative process and our role as legislators. Is it, and I think this is one of the philosophical challenges for us as a group. Mr. O'Malley, when he first arrived and we talked about high-performance government, in that model talked about we get elected from a geographic area, we sit on a committee, but when we are elected to the county board, we are county board supervisors first, and then we are committee members who come from a district. And so I guess my question is, can we really have individual ends, or are really the ends that we are dealing with only collective ends that we as a board of supervisors have agreed will be our ends?
Wow. Okay. Did I say you could have individual ends?
I thought when he asked that question, you acknowledged that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Here, I'll correct my statement. There's only going to be collective ends because the whole board has to decide that. Okay. Could you have ends that have some specific focus within your county? Sure.
Or ends that we as individuals or groups of supervisors might advocate should be an end.
Right.
But unless it gets adopted collectively, it's not an end
of
the county.
But nothing keeps you from saying we're going to focus on different areas. I mean, nothing keeps you from that. But the fact that it's a that you as a body have to decide what the ends are keeps it from being individual.
Thank you. Okay.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a few statements that I think I've learned from this process, and then close with a question. We're by our questions asking a whole lot about how do we figure out to make good ends statements. And one thing that occurs to me is we do ourselves, the executive, and our constituents a really great favor by striving very hard to make the ends that we choose be measurable, quantifiable, so that, as Ray asked, in fact, are we measuring? Can we do so? Can we know the results? There was a question about the ends and how long do they last. I think there can be ends that are finite as well as indefinitely ongoing. In my head, I would say a finite end for this county might be, for instance, we'd like traffic management to be stable, coherent, and quiet traffic, I mean, throughout the time period that the Interstate 90 bridge is being rebuilt for about a two-year period. That's a very finite objective, and it'll be done when it's done. An ongoing one might be something like, we'd like La Crosse County to be a meaningful tourist destination forever. Oh, well, that's nice, but now I got to go back up to that other statement and say, but it's got to be measurable. How are you going to measure that? Well, you can say a portion of the tax income for the county is from tourist revenue or other ways to try and polish that down and get to measure it. But if you can't measure it, you can't decide if you got there or not. One of the things I think we've asked a lot about and people have expressed a little bit of discomfort with is how do we just say, we're only going to control these things and leave all these administrators and executives in charge of all the rest. Well, I think the assumption must be that we start out by saying that we have staff with really good judgment, and I think that, in fact, is the case here. That's a different issue from defining policy governance and clearly defining our ends. If we discover that we don't have staff with really good judgment, then we go back to that kind of a thing. We kind of mentioned they have to be able to take the limitations and do reasonable, not illegal kinds of things. The example that jumped in my head at that time period was we could set a specification for the executive and for our law enforcement people that we want to reduce recidivism, meaning, hey, if you've been in our jail once, we don't want you back. One of the unacceptable ways of managing that is when they come out after one time, you shoot them. No, sorry, that's illegal. So, I mean, there are some limitations on the process. We're going to count on good judgment, Steve, please. My closing question would be, can somebody mention, do we have an idea as to what the agenda for tomorrow's three-hour period might be? We've got a lot of curious minds here about how much further this is going to go, and maybe some people might want to adjust their schedules tomorrow to permit attendance if they have an idea of what's going to be happening.
Our intent was to try to flush this into more practical kinds of things that actually would apply to you, and just really to work with it in a get in a more hands-on process rather than me standing in front of 35 people in front of a PowerPoint to talk about specific cases, to bring more definition to what those limitations are, and to have a discussion of what ends might look like, some of the possibilities of it.
And my thought was to be driven by you and use examples of ends that we are clear on, that we do a good job of monitoring, and how we build off of that, as well as identify things like the annexation, just as an example, where we can define limitations and get more definitive of what we've got up there. There are things you've already defined that do define those boundaries about ethical and imprudent, and other things that we have to not just say, I don't accomplish that, that we don't go outside those boundaries, that the organization has to have systems in place that people don't do something illegal or imprudent. And you can go through a lot of those things. Our drug court, for example, is a place where we're very clear on defining ends. What's the ends we want? People to change their lives around, to not end up reoffending, to not come back. And we had a great monitoring report to you on what the results of that were. It wasn't how many people we needed, how many drug court. We get it right in a couple of places. The monitoring reports that we give you in our monthly reports, as well as the blue budget book, gives you some data, but we don't spend any time on that. So what we were thinking is, let's carve out the islands where we know we're doing it, use those as examples where you see heads nod, that gets it, and how do we find other beachheads, so to speak, where we keep defining those? That's what I'm hoping gets driven by you, of where you think we're getting it right, where you don't think we're getting it right, and where we can build off of that. So again, that's what I'm hoping happens tomorrow as well as tonight.
Margaret.
Thank you, and thank you for your presentation. You've mentioned a couple of times, and Supervisor Paff and Johnson and Rauch all have alluded to constituents as well. If we were to adopt more of a policy governance, is there a greater responsibility to have active input from the taxpayer in defining those ends?
It's nice. It's very difficult to do.
And okay. What have other organizations done to do that?
They have done surveys. They certainly do surveys. They certainly do focus groups around certain kinds of things. Unfortunately, it's the kind of thing, the more structured you get, probably the less information you get. It probably needs to be more open kinds of, typically, at least I'll share my experiences, the more open the conversation, the more you hear. It is your job to sift your way through it and bring the definition to it. When you get it really constrained with very set questions, you end up losing a lot of things that you would like to hear. You're still, even if you don't do it, you still have the responsibility. You still have it now. I mean, you have that responsibility now. This is just a different way to think about it, and you aren't you aren't capturing that info. If you can figure it out, it's great. I would say this. Sorry, I'm running on. I would not wait to define ends to capture that information. If you try to do that, it will take you 2 or 3 years to figure out how to get that information and work your way through it. Assume you know, assume you've heard, try to capture it, make the best definition, and then go back to your constituents and start collecting information. Every organization I know that have that reverse that never get to end definition. Never get to it because they are totally consumed with trying to figure out how to get the right information.
You lost me about halfway through.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go back to the piece where you said, all right, get it, but then it sounded to me like you said define some ends and then go check it out.
Yeah.
If those are the real ends.
That is a much better way to do it and a much more practical way to do it. If you say we need to hear from them first before we define the ends, every organization I know never gets to the ends. Ever. None that I've ever worked with, and we've tried it in multiple ways, they just can't get the energy to get to the ends.
So then it seems to me that you're saying do a rank order type of thing on ends that have been identified, and then isn't that what loses the rich content that you were just describing?
No, I'm saying don't even do a rank order. I'm saying give it your best shot as 35 people to come up with what you think it is and then go back.
And do what?
In a review cycle process of developing ends. I mean, it comes back to the question that was earlier. You don't set them and leave them. They are a dynamic. They are dynamic. So you're going to review them and look at them every year, 3 years, 5 years, to decide whether they're still appropriate, whether you've accomplished them. And in that process, you want a feedback loop that you have built with your constituents. Okay? Sorry.
Okay, well, you know, I do think we do revisit it. I think we do revisit our goals, and when we do evaluations and all those kinds of things. And I think we compare what we did in 2007 to what our goals were in 2008, and we usually have, you know, how far along in the process on this particular end we are. I guess I'm hearing you say that the taxpayer should weigh in more than I think they usually do. Just for an example, if I get calls, most of them are things that are city, related to city types of things rather than county. And that's all I'm saying is how to make that connection better.
Well, we have a mechanism beyond what most organizations have in terms of surveys and focus groups. Our mechanism is called election. You know, and so the voters have the chance, whether they want to or not, every 2 years to weigh in and say they like what we're doing or not like what we're doing. Margaret, though, I would disagree with you in terms of us doing the follow-up. We have that nice little thing, and it's got the sheet of the goals, and every 2 years we have the retreat and so forth. But I agree with Ray Ebert. We really don't. I know. We're off the record, right? We don't monitor. I mean, we really don't. He's absolutely right. We tell him to do stuff, he does it, and we never think about it or hear about it again. And it's not his fault. What we need to do as part of tomorrow is to figure out how we start bringing those things back. Because on the one hand, I hear, you know, Ray say we don't do this monitoring. On the other hand, I hear John Menninger say all we do is listen to reports. We don't want to just listen to reports. We're here to make decisions. I want to make decisions. So how do we keep both of those guys happy is what we're going to talk about tomorrow, I guess.
Part of it.
And then I want to know what the role of public hearings might be. Would they look different? Would they occur more often?
Public hearings?
In terms of getting input from taxpayers.
Well, actually, a public hearing would be a means, I assume.
I'm not sure it's we will get lost if we start down that road tonight. I think it's a process. It's a process that can serve either thing. It can serve means. It can serve all kinds of things. It's a way for your constituents to have a voice. What you're doing with it may change depending on how you decide to govern.
Anne.
Well, I guess I'm a little confused, but I think mostly what you said, you know, we're elected every 2 years, and if they don't like what we're doing, they can boot us out and hopefully get somebody in there that they can. And for the most part, I think they just want us to make decisions and do it, because most of them don't want to be involved. They don't care, and I'll bet more than 80% could not tell you who their county supervisor is. So I think we're just supposed to do what they elected us to do.
I'm agreeing with you. What I'm saying is that in real life, in an ideal world, we would like them as citizens to play a bigger part. I personally would like that. I mean, that's kind of what I would hope would happen. But in real life, that is not what happens. What happens is once they vote, they are, for the most part, most citizens are done. They don't want any more, unless, you know, something happens to them specifically. And in that role, they're really not operating like a citizen. They're a customer. And they've taken their customer hat off, their citizen hat off, and put their customer hat on. They're talking about their own needs, not the greater needs. So I would love for this to do that, but it never works. Okay? And I'm saying, so if you know it's not going to work at the beginning, just assume it's not going to work. Maybe you can figure it out, but you still are going to be saddled with having to figure out what the ends are. And you own that, and they probably expect you to do that.
We like to try to wrap these up around 8 o'clock, and we're past that point. Does anybody have any final words or questions before we close out things, Don?
There's three short things, and I'll try to keep them short. Steve,
now, usually it's just a couple things,
that's
Don.
Pretty
so you're pushing it to an extra one tonight.
You brought up annexations. We have no control over annexations. That's up to the cities and the villages. There's nothing we can do about it because the state law says that. I would hope that we don't get into a territorial war over this thing when we put it all together. I look around the room and I see only about half a dozen or six or seven what I'd call rural supervisors, and the rest are all urban or city supervisors. And that concerns me because I've got a whole bunch of constituents that I get calls on a daily basis or I meet with, and they are concerned about a number of things. And my voice is getting pretty limited here because I can raise the issues, but I can't accomplish a majority vote. And I would hope that whatever you put together isn't that territorial, that you shun out the rural part of La Crosse County, because then if you think I raised hell before, I can raise a lot more hell. But anyhow, and I'm really concerned because the people are talking about taxes. Fees, are a form of taxes, and the state is doing a pretty good job raising their fees so that they can generate a fair amount of income to balance the state budget. I don't really want to do that on the county level because we went up $100,000 in the out county last year, and the projections are $150,000 this year. That is going to raise our county taxes to the rural people, and I'm going to keep on talking about that until we either get some results or we force people not to participate in our programs, and I'm really concerned about that. So I don't I guess I'm going to quit at that point in time.
I'm going to have the final word of county board members on this. Here is what I wanted to accomplish out of this discussion, and it's not having factions or pitting one group against another. We have a lot of meetings.
We do a lot of talking. We pass a lot of resolutions. But are we really making decisions? Or is somebody else making the decisions? In other words, by creating a vacuum where we focus on the 8x8 square, are we then having somebody else, i.e. staff, make the policy decisions? And a lot of times I get concerned that, in fact, that is what we are doing. Because when we focus on the individual tree, somebody else is defining the forest. And I'm trying to get us to make that decision in terms of what really we should be deciding. And if that's what this process results in, then I will consider it to be successful. I'm not trying to shrink our role. Some people think, well, you're just trying to get us out of all the decision-making. In fact, I'm trying to get us into the decision-making so that we make the decisions that matter, not the ones about whether it's pansies or poinsettias. So that's the goal for tomorrow, and I hope many of you were, you know, here having your interest piqued and decide, gee, I want to follow through a little bit on that. Anybody and everybody is welcome to come tomorrow, 9 o'clock, 3220 upstairs. But you get the final word. Oh, what no. do you that, have to tell us?
No, I think that's perfect. I mean, the point was, and that's what policy governance is about, is making sure that you are making the decisions that you need to make. Somebody's going to make them. Steve couldn't have said it better. I'm just going to repeat. Somebody's going to make those decisions. If you're not making them, then you have left them to somebody else, and somebody will make them as in the way in which they wish. Okay? Policy governance helps you make sure that you got the decisions that you're supposed to be yours.
Bob Kyle. You bet I do. Sarah Second. Tom Rauch. All in favor say aye. Opposed no. Carried unanimously. Good night all.